There's an intro for about a minute.
Radio.
But we're live.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I'm your hostess for this evening. And we are, as always, brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com. This has been a very difficult day for most of us who believe in the exceptional nature and the great founding principles of our nation. We've seen the Supreme Court of the United States uphold a law that 99% of the people, if they really understood it, would be recognized as a bad law. It is another attempt by government to strangle individual liberty under the guise of protecting us from ourselves, and the sugar-coated progressive pill of redesigning humanity by legislative process. There are some glimmers of hope, however. As my topic suggests, History 101 teaches us that the power to tax is the power to destroy. And it is. We have seen that today. The fact that Justice Roberts went with the liberal opinion and upheld the Obamacare law on the basis that it could be construed as a tax, after months and months and months of the administration telling us that it wasn't a tax, it couldn't be a tax, it was never intended to be a tax, we're going to treat it like a tax, but it isn't really a tax, and no, we're not going to raise your taxes, is an example of a kind of victory for those of us who believe in small government and a political plum for the current administration. Yes, bad law has been upheld. The Constitution does not guarantee that our legislatures will always write good laws. Look at the Dred Scott decision, for example. But it does guarantee that at least those laws will come under scrutiny by the Supreme Court. In my job as an educator, I have been doing everything I can to teach my students that understanding how our government works is the first and most essential task they have as adult citizens of this nation. What we saw today, the upholding of bad law because it could be construed as something it has been told to us that it is not, is another reason to remind them and all of you listening out there that if you don't understand that the people you elect are going to control your life by the laws they pass, you are not an adult and you are not fit to be a citizen. This unfortunate day in our history hopefully will be a wake-up call to this nation, to all of us in this nation, to understand the importance of getting off the sofa and putting down the beer and the Nintendo and getting your happy little derriere to the voting booth and understanding who and what you are voting for and not being misled and coerced and honey-dipped in hope and change that mean nothing whatsoever except a catchy slogan. It should remind all of us that we, the people, cannot govern ourselves as a nation if we do not govern ourselves as individuals. That we, as a nation, have allowed ourselves and our children to become complacent and apathetic about the men and women we choose to represent us in the halls of government. We fall for a pretty face, believe 30-second sound bites, refuse to think, read, or educate ourselves because it's too hard, and we don't have to because the world owes us something. Well, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, the world doesn't owe you anything. Nobody in the world owes you anything unless you have made a verbal or legal contract with them to exchange goods, services, or money for something. You are not owed anything at all. The only thing you are entitled to is opportunity. And that opportunity isn't limited to material success, a good job with a college degree that guarantees it. That opportunity extends to choosing the people who will make the rules that run your life. Looks like I have my friend Ron calling in. Let's see what Ron has to say on this historic day in our nation. Hello, Ron.
Hey, Miss Terry. I was actually I'm just peachy.
As always, right?
Absolutely. Actually, I was just calling in to listen because the stupid player keeps cutting out every time I go to the chat. But, thanks for picking me up all the same. I've been kind of gloating all day, and I hate to do that. But, if we remember back when Cuccinelli had his little hollow victory and the case was going to go to the Supreme Court, and I told everybody then, they are simply going to tell you that this is a tax under the taxing power of Congress, the same that they did in Helfring v. Davis, just like Social Security. And I held out hope, a false hope as it turned out, but I was holding out some hope that all the pundits and the talking heads were saying, oh, they're going to overrule it. They're going to declare it unconstitutional. I thought, my God, maybe there is a chance that we've got some common sense trickling back into the public policy. But, of course, that turned out not to be the case.
As it always does. I can understand the desire to gloat a bit about being right, because I agreed with you when you made the statement about it, them declaring that it was a tax. What does please me about this whole decision, there's not a heck of a lot in there that does, but there are two factors that I do find encouraging. Number one, the good and plenty cause was basically thrown out as a reason to ram anything we want to put on the American people down the throats of all of us, simply because Congress figures the Commerce Clause gives them the authority to do anything they please. That I found encouraging. The other was the state mandate to expand Medicaid and the federal government's bullying tactics, saying that they would pull funding from our programs if the states didn't expand Medicaid the way they said they wanted it to. I find that encouraging. The obvious problem that we have with that is our states, like our professional victim classes, are addicted to federal money. because it gives them the bigger, fancier, happier
you betcha.
Bill of goods to sell to the ignorant voter.
You're absolutely correct. And the end result, whether the Supreme Court wants to allow it as a mandate or not, is really a moot point, I think. Because in the end, you know as well as I do, the very first thing I heard from the Democrat squawk box here in Georgia is, oh, look at all the revenue this is going to generate in federal tax dollars coming into the state. That's all they see. They got dollar signs in their eyes, and it's going to create a larger bureaucracy, and they'll have more dollars under their control. So they're going to naturally expand those Medicare and Medicaid rolls just as a consequence of all the money that's going to flow in, and they're going to find themselves coming up short in the end.
They are. And they'll also polish the app even more by saying, look how many jobs we've created. The insanity of assuming that government can create anything at all except regulation. Government has never created a job in its life. It's created a slave color, and that's pretty much all it does.
What government is absolutely wonderful at creating is criminals and debt.
Yep, they're really good at that.
Every time they pass a new law, a new legislation, they create a whole new class of criminals.
They do, because they are 99% of them right now, the ones in power in the Senate and the thing in the Oval Office, are progressives. And like 13-year-olds, they're perfectly convinced that they're evolving to godhood and they can redesign people merely by legislating them out of their nasty, selfish habit of actually wanting control over their own life. They believe that it can be done. So far, we've allowed them to do it because of the combination of wanting to believe all the sugar-coated candy and that lovely dollar sign that flashes behind the eyes of every politician and every gimme, gimme, gimme professional victim you can count.
And, you know, God forgive me, but as I was watching the Democratic Black Caucus that was full of, you know, I wanted to puke when I saw John Lewis holding Queen Nancy's hand as they were going down the steps. And I thought to myself, you know, God forgive me, but it would be heaven sent to see a giant Molotov cocktail fall from the sky and just fry them all right there.
I would have loved a bolt of lightning and doggone, it was needed, Ron. It really was. It was sickening. I think for me, the three things that I really can say that I actually hate, and I've spent my life trying not to hate anyone or anything, but these three I can't get past. I hate hypocrisy, I hate lies, and I hate cruelty. And our current administration is riddled with all three.
Well, you know, I was talking to Oz in private chat, and he was talking about, you know, debating a local liberal guy there. And, you know, I feel his frustration because these people, and you're right, it is hypocrisy. They absolutely hide behind the bullcrap smoke and mirror mask of benevolence and wanting to help the poor. And it's nothing more than they want to be the one in control of the money, and they control my life as the contributor, the working contributor, and they control the life of the poor individual that they're helping by giving them the fruits of my labor.
Exactly. They create a dependent class that has to go along with whatever they want, otherwise they believe they will starve. They have taught people for over 40 years, and not only in our public education system, although that's one of the main reasons we have the bucolic byproduct we have now, but they have taught us all that somehow or other we are all victims, and we are all incapable of standing on our own two feet. We are incapable of making reasoned choices. We are stupid. We are lazy. We are totally unable to do or be anything without the benevolent guidance and the open compassion of our beloved government.
Yes, that government, or we're just greedy bastards, one or the other.
Yeah. Well, if you make money out of hard work, of course you're a greedy bastard. I mean, you know, the two things are synonymous. Greedy bastard, working man, you know. Unless, of course, you belong to a union. And then there aren't any greedy bastards in the union.
Anywhere. Right. You know, and I've said it so many times that the ideology, I think, is outlined perfectly in the book of Exodus in the Bible. When you see the Hebrews being led out of captivity, led out of slavery, and they're longing to go back.
Uh-huh.
They want to go back. They're crying for their leeks and their onions. Oh, God, who's going to save us? Who's going to protect us? Who's going to feed us? Where are we going to sleep at night? Who's going to care for my children?
Mm-hmm.
Because they had grown so accustomed to the Pharaoh and the government in Egypt caring for their every need, never mind that they were a slave.
Oh, no. It's just slavery, if it's comfortable enough, becomes a habit.
Yes, and that's exactly what we have.
Yes, and it becomes a need. We have a great many people in this nation who do not understand that rights belong with responsibilities.
Yes.
The two are inextricable. But you cannot get this across because we have been, in effect, kept infants for so long. The progressives can only rule when the rest of us decide we are poor children who need mommy and daddy to take care of us. The nanny state is an incredibly appropriate term because nannies only are used for children. And if we remain children and expect mommy and daddy and nanny government to come and fix our mistakes for us and clean up the mess we made, we are putting on that slave collar, sitting down quietly and standing there with our hands open, waiting for the bowl of milk and bread for tea.
You're exactly right. You know, I mean, we've had this conversation how many times? Plato's Republic, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah.
And this is exactly why there are millions of quote-unquote conservatives out there that suffer from the same affliction. They just don't recognize it as such, which is why so many of them have this knee-jerk reaction. Oh, God, Ron Paul, his foreign policy, he's an isolationist, he's this, he's that. It's like, what the hell are you so afraid of, people?
Mm-hmm. They're afraid of losing their self-image, as most of us are. Look, like I've got another car on the line. Hang on a bit, Ron. I'll see who else is out there. I think I have an idea, so we'll see.
I'm betting.
Hello.
Yeah, it is.
It is. I do that with my favorite California bird of paradise. Hi, Linda. How are you, dear heart?
Fine, everyone. How are you folks? And I know there's a good people in the chat room as well. And I know Ron and I had this conversation earlier because, you know, I turned on my computer and my email box was just flooded from every conservative bite, godfather politics, and, you know, everything on the planet about SCOTUS. Of course, I have another name for them. I think I typed it for Ron. I call them, I don't call them SCOTUS, I call them SCROTUM. But that's just me.
Not far wrong.
Yeah, so anyway, I love my play on words thing. You know, it's just one of my...
Or is an aphrodisiac here.
Well, you know, when you talk about people being victims, this is a perfect opportunity for us to not be victims. And yes, mm-hmm. we may have lost one battle, but I think that this has PO'd so many people today that mm-hmm. if they will just take this and not just forget about it in a week, you know, this, it's got to, you know, people who have been in the 912, whatever, Tea Party groups, people who are conservatives, people who are actually going. There's a group here in Southern Cal pretty close to me, and hopefully when, you know, things calm down and I have a minute to go down there, Saturdays and Wednesdays and in the mornings, they find different venues. These gals are out there en masse registering people to vote. This is something very important. And what mm-hmm. we usually glean is people on the conservative side. People who have mm-hmm. moved and forgotten, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. They get busy, they forget. So this is something we've, you know, I mean, whatever your candidate is, if we still want to try to get Ron Paul, that would be amazing. I'm all for him. Phone bank for that guy, send him money. You know, we've got to get this Leviathan out, and we've got to focus on all the conservative, hopefully, senator hopefuls who can take, like, Indiana or Texas or whatever, and just
and change,
you know,
the balance of power in both houses. As we changed in the midterms in the House of Representatives, we've got to change it in the Senate, and we have to clean the White House. We have.
Oh my God!
I really do believe that quite often it takes a really hard slap in the face to wake people up.
Yeah.
And this may very well be the slap that does it.
Yeah. We don't just need to clean it. We need Ken.
Well, and I think we need to be pushing just as hard, if not harder, at the state level. And the Tea Party thing is great. This needs to get organized, and we need to be pushing at the state level and telling every state, we demand that you nullify this decision right here at the state level. It goes back to our Declaration of Independence, where the phrase that says government derives its just power
from the consent
of the governed.
Yes.
That's not the Supreme Court.
No,
they're not. Yeah. They are not the final arbiters and deciders of what's constitutional and what's not. We are.
Yeah.
And it's time we made our voices heard at the state level and tell our state, if you do this, if you implement this, we're leaving.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
We'll move to a state that won't implement this. We'll move to a state that has the courage within the state legislature to tell the federal government to go pound sand.
Exactly. That's what a lot of them are doing. They're sick of it.
A lot of our Tea Party groups here in Virginia are doing that. Our local Tea Party in my county is not only has a state group that goes whenever there's an open house and makes its presence known in the state house and in the governor's mansion on a regular basis, but they also attend all of the Board of Supervisors meetings and have already stopped a lot of the pro-Agenda 21 changes.
Yes.
That the county plan was going to implement. The other positive thing today, aside from the fact of the slap in the face, it wakes people up. And if you call something a tax, it's a wake-up call. But the other positive thing was holding our attorney general in contempt, which both legally and morally he is contemptible. He is legally in contempt of Congress because he has refused to do as he was subpoenaed to do. This at least shows me that they do have some cojones in Congress in order to indicate that no one, pampered pet of the White House or not, Chicago politician or not, is above the law. When you are subpoenaed, you do not do what the subpoena demands that you do, you are in contempt, period. And whether think it's political or not, it is a perfect, legitimate, and very real charge. We have watched this excuse for a president contravene the Constitution, take vacations, play golf, take his wife to New York for a play date, and do everything possible to show his contempt for this nation and the people who rule it, finally, have somebody in the halls of government stand up and say, oh, no, you don't.
Yep.
If nothing else, it makes the bitter pill of Justice Roberts' opinion go down a little easier. I heard something, or I read something today, a view of Roberts' actions that I found intriguing, that his, in effect, creating or taxing from the bench by indicating that the individual mandate is a tax and falls within Congress's power to tax. He may very well have done a great deal to energize us with that double slap in the face. The first slap, of course, is the idea that they actually did uphold bad law. And the second slap is a supposedly not liberal Supreme Court justice siding with the likes of Sotomayor and Kagan. If that doesn't scare you-know-what out of you, it should.
Then nothing would, exactly. And
you know,
you're right, Terry.
I think this should also be a stepping stone for us to revisit the precedent that was set in Helfrich v. Davis, the idea of Social Security being a tax. And the idea that Congress has a plenary taxing power, meaning they can tax any damn thing they want in any manner they want, And the Supreme Court is going to uphold, irregardless of how direct the tax is, they're going to uphold that it's an excise tax because they don't like the apportionment clause one bit.
Oh, I think they don't. They do not like that at all. And that was the little weaselly, oh, well, we can't, it doesn't really fit under the apportionment clause at all, so we can call it a tax even though it isn't being equally applied. Well, we can weasel our way out from underneath that and say, well, it doesn't have to be. There are a lot of potential constitutional amendments that could come out of this decision today. Some positive and some negative. I've been thinking ahead myself to the kinds of limitations that could be put into an amendment that would define, as Ron has said over and over in his show and in our chat rooms, really define what the difference is between an excise tax and a use tax or whatever the other term is. Most people hear the word tax, and they accept it as a kind of a corollary of Benjamin Franklin's "There's nothing certain except death and taxes." All of us understand that in order for our government to provide the services that we constitutionally have told them they are required to provide us, they have to be able to pay for them. So we all expect to be taxed, we understand, if we have half a brain, and that's probably maybe a third of the country has half a brain. That nothing is free, that you don't get the State Department of Transportation to come fix your road for nothing. The people out there pouring the tar aren't volunteering. They get paid. The people who get the tar from aren't volunteering either. They don't make it on their kitchen stove and hand it out to all and sundry. Unfortunately, the two-thirds of the country who don't understand that things actually cost money assume that all of this comes from volunteer labor and somehow or other Obama's stash will pay for all of the things they want. Sooner or later, somebody is going to have to wake up the two-thirds of the country that does not understand that money is not rain, the gentle rain that droppeth from heaven, as mercy is in Portia's speech in The Merchant of Venice. It comes from the exchange of goods, services, and labor. Somebody is getting paid to do the things you want done. We understand that we've got to pay the repairman when he comes to fix our washer. Why in the name of all that is holy do these people not understand that those lovely welfare checks came from me and you and everybody else paying taxes into the federal coffers?
You're absolutely right, Terry. And the problem is that, you know, Article 1, Section 8 gives Congress the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, but they're limited for specific purposes.
Mm-hmm.
To pay the debts, well, it's pretty clear at $15.3 trillion and rising, we're not doing that.
Amen to that.
To provide for the common defense, okay, we got that covered. And the general welfare.
Except the for general the common welfare, defense part, they're visibly cutting that down to practically nothing.
Right, but the general welfare of the United States. And then we have to determine, what is the United States? Well, the United States is not the people. It is
it's
a union of
government.
Correct, it's a government. Okay,
yes.
So the general well-being of the government, the ability of the government to carry out all those programs or all those duties that we have empowered them to do, you're absolutely correct. The problem that we face is that our taxes don't go to pay for any of those things. As was pointed out by the Warren Commission, the Grace Commission that was commissioned by Ronald Reagan. They said that of all the individual income taxes, one-third goes to absolute waste. One-third goes to social welfare programs, and one-third goes to fund the interest on the national debt. Well, there's nothing in Article 1, Section 8 that provides Congress with the authority to collect taxes, duties, or imposts to redistribute that money to those who are less fortunate.
That's quite correct. And unfortunately, The reason that people do not pay attention to this, and most of them don't even know anything about the Constitution, it's just
right.
they hear the word and it doesn't mean anything to them. We don't teach them about the Constitution. We
right.
teach them it's a big, big document, and they have to remember how many amendments they are, and they have to know which one did what of the great social upheavals, like giving women the vote and freeing slaves. Those they have to know about. They don't have to know about the lovely 17th that pulled the choice of senators
yep.
away from the states and handed it to
right.
the mob. No, no, that's not important, you know. No, and besides, that might be controversial, and God knows we might offend somebody.
Go ahead.
It drives me crazy, mainly because I learned this stuff in school. So did you, Linda, and so did you, Ron, and so did everybody else out there in our chat room and the folks who belong to Patriot Families. We were taught the, if you will, the skeleton, the anatomy of our mm-hmm. government. We were taught to understand it, just as important as understanding our own bodies and how our organs work. Physical science and biology are incredibly important. If you don't understand how your body works, you're not going to pay any attention to how to take care of it, or if something's wrong, understand that that pain means something. But we don't teach our kids now to understand the body of our nation. We do not teach them to understand why the Constitution was written. What was it intended to do? It was not intended to give government things. It was intended to limit government so government couldn't take away our inalienable rights. Government's function was to provide the things that protected those rights. It did not give us rights. It can't. It did not define our rights. It was created to make sure that our rights as human beings and citizens of this nation would be protected by those we elected to serve us in government. Not to redistribute our wealth, not to pat poor little victims on the head and say, gee, I'm sorry, you can't get a job, be on unemployment for the next 3 years and we'll take care of you. That is not the purpose of the Constitution. But you cannot teach this. You can't teach it because of the way that our educational system is structured. It is structured to create a new slave class that is happy with the collar. And it's done a damned good job.
Yes, it has, and that's sad. That's why I noticed that you put "It's a Sad Day in America," you know, at the top of your description. Mm-hmm. It has been the slippery slope sadness for how many years, how many decades. I noticed today briefly the left is not happy with the decision that the Congress talked about for Holder. You know,
mm-hmm.
of course, ugly Maxine Waters on the brain. She was standing there with this cutie look on her face. She was one of the group around this microphone, and some clown from some Democrat. Well, they were all Dems. There weren't any Republicans in that group, but they were just pitching them. I'll tell you.
Wasn't it just such a lovely scene to see the gentleman, John Lewis, holding Princess Nancy's hand to help her down the steps?
I am so glad that I wasn't there at the time. My personal explosion might have taken out many innocent people.
You know, getting back to this thing, and this is a topic that I really enjoy discussing. It's very complicated, but talking about taxes, mm-hmm. and it's really clear and it's interesting, and I had never really noticed this before, but it says the power to lay and collect taxes, comma, duties, comma, imposts and excises, comma. So clearly they're drawing a distinction between duties, imposts and excises and taxes.
Mm-hmm. And taxes, yeah, they are.
Okay, and taxes are mm-hmm. direct, okay? Taxes are direct taxes, what they call a poll tax.
Mm-hmm.
All of these other things, a duty
mm-hmm.
or a fee, without anyone that's been overseas or been on a cruise
mm-hmm.
or anything else,
mm-hmm.
you know there's
oh, yeah.
duty-free
right.
shop.
Duty-free shop, you don't have to pay an extra fee for imported goods.
Right.
Correct.
It's
so
hysterical.
Now we know what duties are on. Duties mm-hmm. are on products, goods. Okay.
Yep.
And the
mm-hmm.
same as an impost or an excise. An excise tax mm-hmm. is a tax that can be avoided. It's not directly foisted upon the manufacturer or the mm-hmm. sale of the good. Mm-hmm. The tax on liquor. I don't mm-hmm. have to pay any alcohol tax if I don't choose to. Mm-hmm. I can simply either not drink alcohol or I can create mm-hmm. my own alcohol right here at home for my own mm-hmm. consumption and never pay the excise mm-hmm. tax on alcohol. Same mm-hmm. thing with tobacco.
Yeah.
I work in the automotive industry. There are certain tires that the government decided that if a tire weighs more than a certain amount, I believe it's 30 pounds, there mm-hmm. is an additional tax on it. It's an excise tax on rubber
mm-hmm.
based on the quantity of rubber. Rubber mm-hmm. is an imported product.
Yeah.
Those are all indirect taxes. I can avoid that tax
by not
tires
purchasing.
I don't
yeah.
have to purchase a tire that weighs that mm-hmm. much. I can get mm-hmm. a different vehicle that doesn't require such large tires.
Mm-hmm.
The income tax, however, being mm-hmm. determined as an excise tax, is nothing more than an exercise in, to quote a Supreme Court justice, linguistic gymnastics.
Oh, yeah, and they're good at that.
They mm-hmm. are. What they do is they simply take a term and they twist and pull mm-hmm. and obfuscate until they have completely mm-hmm. redefined the meaning of that term.
Yep. Well, to quote Rush Limbaugh, words actually do mean something to everybody except those in government.
Yep.
Words are merely something that I can rearrange and define a different way. Take the term racism.
Oil.
Take the term racism, for example. I have an older dictionary that was published in the late 40s, early 50s. And the definition of racism in that dictionary is, and I'm paraphrasing, the belief that one race is superior innately mm-hmm. to another. The new dictionary defines racism as derogatory comments about Ugh. Any particular race.
Wow.
I would assume that the progressive dictionary would define racism as being being a white person.
Yes, they do. And that's their yes. definition of racism. Even the N-word, the infamous N-word, has an entirely different definition when used black on black than it does when a white person uses it to a black person. Words don't mean things to progressives and their ilk. Words mean what the government tells you they mean.
Yep.
Or what society assumes they mean because of the 30-second soundbite and the low attention span of 90% of the country.
Well, you know, there's a term for that, okay?
Other than stupidity?
Yes, absolutely there is, and it's called conventional wisdom.
Uh-huh.
All right? And
yep.
conventional wisdom is simply the majority opinion or what is accepted as the majority mm-hmm. opinion of the day, public policy. You know,
uh-huh.
we're no longer governed by laws. We're governed by public policy. Roosevelt made that extremely clear.
Mm-hmm. And we're also governed by society's norms, which is inherent in being human beings and living in societies. Societies create norms because that is what allows them to survive. Without those norms, you would have chaos and anarchy, and that only works with an extremely select population. If you've ever read Heinlein's The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, you'll know what I'm talking about that. If you can select your population, you can have rational anarchy. But with ordinary people being allowed to breed all over the place, you might get somebody who isn't terribly logical in the mix, and, oh, my God, we can't have that, so no, we can't have rational anarchy. Oz just asked me which dictionary was it published. The copy that I have that has that original definition of racism is incorrect. It was published in 1965. Free
you know,
civil rights legislation.
There's a crazy movie out there. Mm-hmm. I could barely stand to watch because it's supposed to be a comedy, but it's very poorly done. It's a bad B movie, but it would be funny if it were not so true. The name of the movie is Idiocracy.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's a government experiment gone awry where this military enlisted man, a private who had no family, and this prostitute, they put them in these capsules, and they're supposed to stay in there for 20 years or something and come out, and you know, they put them in this animated, suspended animation state. Well, the project gets defunded, they get forgotten about, they're in this back locker, and they are discovered some 500 years in the future, and everyone is, they're all idiots. They're all dumb. I mean, just plain ignorant. They all sit around the recliner chairs that everyone has in their homes are also a toilet. So they all sit on the toilet watching television, drinking Brondo, right, and breeding like rats. And they're, it's insane. And so here comes this guy, and he's probably got an IQ of 110, and he's the smartest guy in the world.
Oh, of course.
And they're trying to figure out, you know, why the plants aren't growing, because they're watering the plants with Gatorade, basically. Because they have electrolytes, which are salts, and it's killing the plants, and the crops are failing, and they can't figure out why.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. But it's so close to reality.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is. One of the benefits of farce as a dramatic medium or as a literary medium is that if it's done well enough like that, it sometimes actually causes people to think, oh, my God, I think it's funny, but maybe it isn't.
Right.
This is what we do. The ability to understand our own idiocracy, our own personal idiocracy, is a very rare quality. Like Ron said earlier about people who are basically just want to sit back and use the money to do whatever they want. And money is the most important thing. One of the reasons the biblical definition of money, the love of money, is as the root of all evil, is because when you only focus on material success, you are limited in what you can achieve, because you don't grow up just because you're rich. You could give a 2-year-old $6 million and it won't give him a college degree at the age of 2. And 90% of people in our government right now are effectively 2-year-olds in that general definition. The power and money are what they seek. And the idea of being a statesman, a servant of the public, has disappeared from our everyday language. How often do you hear anyone referred to as a statesman, even historical figures? That concept has just about disappeared. It began in the 60s, actually, with the appearance of quote-unquote revolution, make love, not war, tune in, drop out, and whatever, all of the other fun stuff that my husband didn't. But we were not married at the time and didn't even know each other, and he did actually grow up, bless his heart. But the belief that somehow or other you could redefine the world in your own image simply by wandering around with a flower or standing in a line, having a concert or protesting this, that, or the other, or defecating on a police car. It began then in our modern times. It has existed since humanity existed. One of the things that I put on Facebook today as a result of the SCOTUS decision was the inability of people to really understand that you have to learn from history. You have to. What we are seeing is so 1930s Berlin that it's absolutely terrifying.
It is.
We are seeing the same mentality. When Hitler began his rise to power, the reason he got as many people to follow him as he did was all of the promises of free health care, free child care, jobs for everybody, houses for everybody, cars for everybody, the good life. Everybody will have everything that they need and want. Nobody will be better than you. And this same mentality is guiding our government now. helping.
And, you know,
Terry, one aspect.
I was going to say, and people forget, or they never knew, what precipitated Hitler's rise to power, and the clamor for all those government largesse was the absolute depression that Germany was put into after World War One, and the tremendous sanctions that were placed upon them that made it a breeding ground, and then the global depression that occurred in the 1920s and leading up to World War Two. And we were doing the same damn thing right here in the United States of America under Hoover and damned FDR. We had all the same socialist policies being instituted here.
Yep.
We just weren't trying to persecute one class of people.
Well, we hadn't chosen a victim yet.
Correct.
Or a scapegoat. We have not chosen a scapegoat, although there is a tremendous amount of anti-Semitism going on in this nation, particularly on college campuses. And it
seems there is. But, you know, now they found the victim. It's the middle class.
Oh, yes. Well, actually, no, we're not. Victim isn't the middle class, according to progressives. The middle class is the aspiration and goal of every citizen. It used to be that the aspiration and goal of every American citizen was to be wealthy enough to be able to engage in philanthropy. If your mind and heart went that way. Yeah, that used to be our goal. It's not now. Our goal is to make everybody middle class. Well, do you remember, those of you who are older than 12, that the term middle class, when it was used to describe someone, was not a compliment?
Correct.
Uh-huh. I remember it vividly. I remember vividly.
We transferred from blue collar to middle class.
Uh-huh, exactly.
You said earlier in your little rant there about 1933 Germany, when the idiot became chancellor, and you talk about the correlations. Well, before I even read all these other books, you know, the previous books that I had done throughout my life, when Barack got elected and he started doing the takeover of the GM and all these things he started implementing, every single one of them, because I was paying attention at that point, I made that comparison that minute because I knew enough about that period of history that's exactly what Hitler did. Barack wasn't exactly taking his, you know, AK-47 out and aiming it at us, but he might as well have. I mean, I saw this coming. I saw all this coming from the minute he got sworn and started his BS and, you know, this giant governmental takeover on every single aspect of our lives. I mean, every single aspect.
I have been saying that I feel as if I'm in a time capsule, that I've been transported back 80 years, and I'm watching in our capital, Berlin, in the 1930s. I've been saying it for 3 years now.
I know.
And it is. It's frightening. The number of kids that I see and I deal with who are totally incapable of recognizing that history actually does have something important to tell you.
Right.
It's coming back to the purpose of this show and the topic of tonight and all the stuff that we've been talking about. We would not be in the situation we are now if we had not started dumbing down our children 40 years ago. And promising them that their mere existence guaranteed them everything they wanted and that they were not responsible for anything they did.
Well, when we made education a quote-unquote right.
Yes. And it isn't.
There you go.
It's a good.
And a responsibility.
It's a goal. It's a responsibility of responsible parents to educate their children, not the state.
And it is a good as well. The difference between a good and a right. You have a
same with healthcare.
Right, you have a right to breathe, right? Okay. In effect, if our laws forbid murder, they forbid the taking of your life on a whim because we believe in the inherent sanctity and the right to human life in spite of abortion laws. But you do not have a right to an education. You have a right to the opportunity to learn.
Of it.
But an
and
education
food and a job and healthcare.
Yep.
It's these are and similar goods, actually. These are products.
Good. They're good
goods
things.
And services.
We all have the we all have a good thing that we can strive for. I cannot say that I have a right to a gold medal in the Olympics. It's the same.
Right.
It's exactly the same mentality. I have a right to this because I want it. Is the most heinous moral inversion I have ever heard in my life.
And they're doing it, Terry, in the schools with the children from five on up.
I know.
Just for showing up and breathing, they're getting these little trophies, whatever, participation awards. And it is, to me, you're right, it is just despicable. It is very diabolical what they're doing.
I told you all about what happened with my grandson and his tantrums and his totally unacceptable behavior and the way that his school was attempting to alter his behavior by taking him off in a corner and playing a game with him and giving him candy.
Yes,
and he's not stupid.
That bad behavior.
He's not stupid. The bad behavior definitely didn't diminish. It escalated. You know, it is the same underlying principle.
Yep.
My husband and I were talking about the fact that there were two ways of viewing all of the money that's poured into educating those who are probably never going to actually learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
The one view is that it's a total waste, and the other view is, well, maybe if we pour more money in it, we can teach them more than they would learn if they didn't have us. They need more, so obviously it's going to cost more. Well, the problem with those two things, both of them are technically correct as far as possible outcomes, but they both make an underlying assumption that we can somehow or other buy learning for somebody else. And like we could go out to the grocery store and buy a candy bar and give it to the kid. You can't buy knowledge and put it in somebody else's head.
You can't. I know.
No, it's not possible. Unfortunately, because we have extrapolated from the idea of the candy bar to knowledge, we have people who elect an idiot. Well, no, he's not an idiot. He's a very clever, manipulative Marxist.
Yeah.
And who uses that underlying principle that's been taught now for 40 years, that you're entitled to this, and all it takes is federal money, and we will give it to you. We'll buy it for you.
I don't know. You're right about buying knowledge and putting it into someone's head. I'm living proof. I live in California. It doesn't work.
There is a poor darling.
Well, you know what?
Bring mama and come to Virginia.
What they do with this proclamation of all these rights is they create an artificial demand for government services.
Yes, they do. Uh-huh. By the promise that government can, in effect, put brains in the head of someone who doesn't have them.
And, you know, I question these people, and it's a product of our environment at this point. The monetary system, I know I've harped on this since I got on the Patriot Families, and I'll continue to harp on it because it is the central issue. Without the monetary system, all this other stuff dies out on the vine. But because we have this monetary system and because we've indoctrinated people into this belief of these entitlements, we've created an economic environment in this country where it is nearly impossible for a family of three or four to have one breadwinner in the household and one staying home, whether it be the mother or the father, to educate the children. So we create the necessity of public education, which is mandated by the government in the first place.
Exactly.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a cyclical process.
And it has led directly to Al Sharpton's famous equal stuff in everybody's house.
Yep.
I heard Sean Hannity the other night railing against a liberal columnist, who was talking about the fact that equality is a dangerous concept because it doesn't allow us to recognize superiority. And he interpreted that as meaning the superiority of the progressive elite. Well, I agreed with the columnist because the biggest problem with the progressive elite is that they think equal means alike. And it doesn't.
Yep.
You cannot have equal everything. We don't come equipped with equal everything.
Right.
And that's a good thing.
Yes,
I am not in any way, shape, or form physically equipped to be a long-distance runner. Sorry about that. It's not in me. I am physically equipped to be a very good linguist and a pretty good teacher. I am intellectually equipped to understand abstract concepts and hopefully explain them to others in 16 or 17 different ways in hopes that sooner or later the light will go on. But I am not either intellectually or physically equipped to be a professional golfer. There's a little too much of me in the front to make the arms work properly for that using a driver, but that's okay. You know, I didn't intend to be a professional golfer. I have no belief that somebody should buy me a professional golfership, if you will. But unfortunately, yes, that's a slightly outre metaphor, and yes, it's meant to be humorous, but it's not far off the truth.
Right.
The assumption that you can buy someone expertise or ability or any of those other things. The idea of holding athletes up as role models is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of in my life.
I know.
They're not role models. They're very talented, skilled people who work their butts off to improve the skills they were born with.
Right,
they are
and
not
that's
role
it,
models.
Period.
I can't be LeBron James. I can't be Clemente or Lou Gehrig or anybody like that. I can't. I am not physically equipped to be that good at what they do. And to use that as a lure, as a carrot, to pull kids into college in the assumption that it's a pathway to professional sports, which has been going on for the last 50 years.
Yes.
I watched that happen. I had a kid who came to me for tutoring who went to Hampton University. And he got into Hampton University because they pushed him through high school because he was a good fullback. And once he got to Hampton University, they pulled him through first year, and then he hurt himself on the field. And guess who was no longer in Hampton University because his sixth grade reading level wouldn't allow him to continue his education.
Yeah, that's sad. That's heinous. I know. It's horrible.
I can buy you success by putting you in an environment in which you are totally incapable of achieving it.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, Terry. I've worked in the automotive industry my whole life. I mean, I grew up around it. My grandfather was an aircraft mechanic, and he worked with the B-17s. My father was an aircraft mechanic, and it's a natural, inherent ability. I've had it since I was a little kid. It wasn't something that you had to teach me. It's a gift. And I have worked with guys that have gone to the best trade schools, gotten a four-year degree, associate's degree in mechanics and applied sciences, and they absolutely are incapable of earning a comfortable living doing my job. They're just no good at it.
Exactly.
For all
the number
of people and trying and learning in the world, when it actually comes to putting hands on parts and figuring out things logically, they just utterly fail.
Exactly. And we are telling our children, the biggest lie I ever saw was a mother telling her Asperger syndrome son that he would certainly go to college. When it took him 7.5 hours to complete a 2-hour standards of learning reading test.
Good grief.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Oh, my God.
And, yeah, it is not wrong to have high expectations because people very rarely exceed your expectations to begin with. But it is very wrong to have totally unrealistic, utopian, idiotic expectations that are used only to further your power base. And that's what we have now. We have it across the board, not only in public education, but we have it in everything government does. It is the same euphoric pipe dream, pie in the sky and peace on earth for everybody. I'm going to have equal stuff in my house with the president. I'm going to have equal this. I'm going to have something else. I'm going to have some other kind of silly nonsense going on because the government will buy it for me. and give it to me. This whole healthcare debacle, this whole manipulative, bullying, procedural crap that they went through to get the thing made law in the first place, against the will of the American people, is just a shining example of the insanity of progressivism and its goals, and the unwillingness of many people in this nation to recognize that no, everything isn't going to fall in your lap. There is, it should. The easy button is the most horrible concept I've ever seen in my life for an advertising campaign. It works because we've been programmed to accept it.
Right.
And it gets applied in areas that unfortunately doom this nation unless we do something about it.
Exactly. I know. It's crazy. I don't know what the answer is.
You and me and Ron and Yolanda and all the folks in the chat room and the members of Patriot Families and the 912 groups and the Tea Parties and Freedom Works and Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Ron Paul and anybody else who's willing to stand up and take the risk of offending somebody by telling them the truth.
That's true.
What we can do about it.
Yeah, and pray a lot, too.
Yeah, well, that never hurts, dear. Never hurts at all. I'm of the firm belief that divine intervention got us our independence in the first place, because if you look at history, there was no way we should have won that war.
No, not at all. Absolutely.
I'm hoping we haven't screwed up so royally that we're going to have to go through an incredibly painful period before we get some more of it, but it might very well happen.
Yeah.
But that's
not
in my hands, because I'm not God and I'm not a progressive, so I don't think I'm God. You have to be a progressive.
Yeah, because they do think that, don't they? The rats.
Oh, they're convinced of it. We're evolving toward godhood. And, you know, it's funny because in my studies for my master's degree, part of transpersonal psychology, which is what my degree is, and no, I'm not going to bother to go into what it is because it'd bore you silly, but part of it is the idea that somehow or other the fringe elements of an already fringe branch of psychology have the belief that we are somehow evolving toward superhuman godhood status, that we are becoming something other than human beings. Well, I don't agree with that, and I had a tendency to, you know, write papers that were tongue-in-cheek whenever I had to read one of their silly works. But the progressives do believe this. But they believe that only a few of us are evolving toward godhood. And that few is them. They're the ones
of
who
course.
Evolve toward godhood. We are the happy little bees in the beehive, each with our assigned task, and happy to fly off and pollinate and come home and service the queen and sit back and die for the security of the hive.
Exactly.
We're the ants leaving your scent trail to where the food is. We're the complacent good citizen clone who believes our government is almighty. One of the reasons that the phrase under God was placed in our Pledge of Allegiance was to remind us that we are under God, not on top of him.
Yeah, well, this entire entity, the progressive ideology, whatever you want to call these people, I call them Fabian socialists, the philosopher kings, you know, because that's what they are. They really, truly believe that they are. And this whole philosophy, and I know I've talked about it, I know Ron's talked about it, comes from the old, the Luciferian worshiping of the secret cities, secret society, secret knowledge, all this nonsense. And they're still perpetrating this crap today. And this is what we see, these people who are fomenting and pushing, yet Warp 20, this Agenda 21. This is their theology. It's in everything they write. Everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, I've got it in
the
my
one
folder.
World order. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
The one world order. The idea, it's the science fiction Gaia idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Akkar, the sentient planet. We are merely cells in an organism.
Right.
And as good little cells, we need to know our place. And that is what Agenda 21 is about. My friend Ron said in the chat room that he's not overly fond of the pledge because it advances ideology of Christian nationalism, and I agree with him. In that sense, I agree completely. because I don't believe that we are a Christian nation, a Muslim nation, a Jewish nation, a Buddhist nation, a Baha'i nation, a Hutterite nation, an Amish nation, a Mormon. I believe we are a nation of diverse peoples who, thank God, whether you believe in him or not, has the right to seek the divine in our own individual ways. But we need to be reminded, if nothing else, that we are not divine.
Right.
Unfortunately, you can't get a progressive to admit that he or she is not involved toward God. And the rest are uninvolved pond scum that needs to be guided and herded. And this is part and parcel of why we are in the mess that we're in today, because it's a lot easier to be complacent, relaxed pond scum sitting on your recliner toilet than it is to be an involved, educated, active, motivated citizen. Work takes effort. We are telling people that work is not supposed to be effort. Work is supposed to be a guarantee of money.
Well, I'll tell
that's
you
not what I was taught.
Right, and I'll tell you who's finding out how hard this is, and that's all of the conservatives who woke up, you know, 4 years ago and started getting involved and going out and doing everything they're doing, not only just educating themselves but others as well, going right to their local governments, going to their state level, going out and being poll workers. I mean, this has been, to me, this looks like, if we go back to the 9/12 beginnings, et cetera, and other conservative groups, even maybe prior to that, actually getting off their couches and getting involved and educating themselves and going forth, you know what I mean? It's like the old Whitfield spiritual awakening in this country. It's like the second time around. This is what I'm seeing, and it's energized. I think that these pundits, whom I'd love to just put duct tape over their mouths at times because they make me tired. I don't want to hear it anymore. You know, they say, "Oh, the Tea Party's dead," and all this stuff. You know. We're just not out in public hanging on to signs anymore. You know, we're doing our gig. We are hanging out in boardrooms and making plans and strategizing, and we're doing it. We're writing elevator speeches for our cause. I mean, we're doing it. It's actually happening. Because I'm a part of to many of them. Go ahead.
And that's why the Tea Party was destined to be underestimated, Linda, because our standing around holding signs was, to the left, another example of people being herded into buses and told, go protest this. They had one of the reasons they had so much difficulty and were so flailing around and flapping all over the place is they kept looking for the power behind the Tea Party, and they couldn't figure out that it wasn't behind the Tea Party. It was right in the middle of it.
They're not real bright.
Now,
they're not as smart as they think they are.
No, dear, they're not. If they were as smart as they thought they were, they wouldn't be progressives. If they were capable of rational thought, they certainly wouldn't be progressives.
What did Ann Coulter say? If Democrats had brains, they'd be Republicans?
Pretty much.
Yeah, that was funny. I liked that. I mean, not that I agree with her wholeheartedly, because there's too many progressives on the R side, too, you know, the Republican side. And I don't care what label they call themselves or what party they align themselves with. If they're progressive, they're wrong, and they're not to be trusted, and they should be done away with.
They should be levered out of the halls of power by the power of the people. Done away with, to me, sounds a little – we do need some, you know, comic relief every now and again.
Yeah, I'm not advocating all violence unless they come to me.
I don't advocate violence unless it's necessary to protect myself, my husband, my cats, my property, and my life. You know, those I will do. But other than that, no, I'm not going to walk up and throw rocks through people's windows just because I don't like their politics. Because all that does is put me in jail, and they have a talking point to explain that she's a Tea Party member, so they're all crazy. And this is something that the other thing that progressives have as a mindset is that mechanistic groupthink. They don't understand the power of individuality. They believe in the integrity of the group. They believe the group and the safety of the group has to be of prime importance, and they believe that they dysregulate and will come to that incredibly enlightened understanding and allow them to be the ones who protect the group by making sure that we don't step one inch out of the group.
Right.
It's a 13-year-old mentality. If you've ever hung around with middle schoolers for any length of time, and God, I hope you're never condemned to such a horrible thing, but if you ever have to hang around with them, you see the progressives in every one of those little charming, innocent, filthy-mouthed faces. And believe me, they are.
I know they are.
But it's
no,
that,
the reason, it's you know what it is, when you're 13, 14, your insecurities are tantamount to, you know, unbelievable things, because they don't know who they are. They're still growing up spiritually, emotionally, mentally, physically. You know, they're very insecure. And the thing is, if you feel like you're identifying with people and you're accepted in that group, then you feel safe. And I think that's all that is. And it's a very immature thing. It's like the baby on the mother's lap. If you sit down and it feels cold, it's going to cry. It wants to feel safe. I get that. But
and it's perfectly acceptable if you're it's acceptable if you're 13, but not if you're 70. Or 60,
absolutely.
Or 20, or 40.
I know.
It's
not
acceptable. This goes back to the to my feeling that the only way that progressives can actually succeed in their wonderful new world order utopian dream is to turn us all into children. Children need guidance by the very nature of being immature proto-humans. They are not adult. It would be an oxymoron to expect them to be adult. I find myself, every once in a while, I'll get a bright, articulate 13-year-old and almost start believing he might be an adult, and then thank God he does something to remind me that he's a kid, so I'm not disappointed. But
that's because of their emotional state, right?
Yeah. We shouldn't have to accept and expect our legislator and our chief executive to be 13-year-olds. We should not
same way. Yeah, and the worst part is they treat us like we're 12. I mean, it's horrible.
Eight. They actually treat us like we're 8. Have you ever watched a 13-year-old and his 8-year-old little brother or little sister? That's the way progressives treat us. You know, that is exactly the viewpoint. It's the same pattern, and we're the 8-year-olds who are hanging on their skirts as they're trying to go out and make the group better, or hang with the gang, or interact with people who understand them. And of course, like 13-year-olds, nobody has ever experienced the wonders of life the way they have, or its horrors. Nobody has ever felt the compassion for the poor that they have. Everybody prior to them has been enslaving the masses and beating them savagely and stealing their children. Oh, my God. It would be funny.
Yeah, it would be funny. It's the same mentality as a kid who's just discovered sex and they think they're the only ones that know about it and they invented it.
They're convinced they have. And nobody ever had as much fun at it or ever will as we did. That's pretty much it. And then you add in the 13-year-old desire for power, too. Most people who are who are natural bullies usually wind up either getting killed or in jail by the time they're 25 or 30. Unless, of course, they're lucky enough to find political backing and become president.
or attorney general.
or attorney general, right. But in general, a bully usually gets his or her comeuppance eventually, because what goes around comes around. But when you're 13, you can nibble, because you've got a bunch of kids who are all smaller than you are that are great fodder for being a bully. The sixth graders are about 8 to 10 inches shorter than you are. They're stiff. And this big, hulking eighth grader who's taller than I am, and this little bitty, tiny sixth grader, you know, is a lamb and a wolf discussing lunch. You know, it's just pretty much, you're a bully, but the perfect venue for discussing it. And that goes along with the progressive ideology, too. The one positive light, one of the two positive lights in this Supreme Court decision is the handcuffs or manacles put on the federal government's ability to bully the states with impunity. The idea that they could force states to expand Medicaid and withhold funds from other programs to do so.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Now, and this is bullying. If you can't get it by the carrot, you use the stick.
Sure.
And it's pretty much the way, because to the progressives, the vast majority of people are literally amoebas to their angelic enlightenment.
Exactly, because so superior in every way. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, I know. I had a young gentleman who's a liberal. Basically, he had made a remark that the Tea Party couldn't figure out what it wanted, and I had explained what the Tea Party wanted, and that it was not specific to a particular political agenda per se, but more about fiscal responsibility, limited government, et cetera, et cetera. And his method of countering that was, then they'd be perfectly happy if we just spend more than we had if we put 100% of it into social welfare and disbanded an army. And I said, no, they wouldn't. And
oh my
God. Yeah. It's a typical progressive viewpoint that, see, I'm smart. See, this is what you really think. This is what you really mean. You know, you just want it all spent on, conquest and evil. But I prove that you don't know what you're talking about. I finally just walked away. Because when you think that is a logical argument and a good explanation and a talking point, there's something missing in the circuits.
Missing between the ears. It's really bad.
It's either missing or it's atrophied from non-use. I don't know which.
Probably a little bit of both. Well, thank you for taking my call, and I'm really glad that we got a chance to air our grievances today because, we're all in the same, pretty much we do have our ideology rooted in the founding to what's left of it, I just want to say thanks for everyone who joined your show today and Ron and everybody, and thank you. And we'll just keep fighting, Terry, just keep doing it.
I'll keep, even if anybody listens, I'll keep talking. If they decide to lock me up somewhere in one of those pretty white coats ties in the back, I'll talk in there too. Who knows? Somebody might be crazy enough to actually believe me.
All right, sweetheart. Well, God bless, and I'll see you in the chat room.
David just told me he promised he'd bring me a knife if that happens. I've asked him before.
All right, love. Take care.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks for calling in tonight, honey. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, we've only got about 12 minutes left of tonight's show. So I'd like to use them to basically encourage everybody who's listening out there to not take today's slap in the face as a punishing, crippling blow, but as a wake-up call. Understand that the Constitution does not guarantee that mortal men elected to Congress are always going to make good and wise laws. All the Constitution does is try to put brakes on the laws that they make sufficiently so that if there is a bad law, it can be changed, it can be repealed, it can be ruled unconstitutional. If we are to rule ourselves as a nation and as individuals, we have to understand that the power to do so lies within us. It doesn't lie in government. It lies in you and me. It isn't a function of your local city council or your board of supervisors or governor or your senator or your representative or your president. The power to rule ourselves as a nation resides in each of us. As the intro piece for my shows says, we are the nation. We are Benjamin Franklin and Babe Ruth. We are also Martin Luther King. We are Mother Teresa. We are every positive and negative aspect of human beings because we are human beings. We are not perfect. We are not gods. We are not omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. We are, however, resilient and tough and willing to work hard for what we believe and for what we desire. We are capable of greatness. Greatness in good and greatness in evil. It is the nature of human beings to make mistakes. because this is the way we learn. We can see that as a nation, in 2008, we made a very large mistake. We believed sound bites and happy words. We believed that electing an African American president would show the world that we were an enlightened nation who truly believed that the color of one's skin did not matter when choosing a person to lead our country. We made a mistake because we assumed that voting for someone according to race is just as bad as voting against someone according to race. Skin color is not the issue in what our current problems have created, ladies and gentlemen. Lies, deception, and power hunger are the issues. We are not a nation of ants or bees. We are not politically correct because we're scared to be anything else. We're not sheep waiting for a evolved to godhood shepherd in the Oval Office. We are Americans with a heritage, no matter how soon we got here or how long ago our families came. A heritage that was fought for by men and women who believed that individuality, individual freedom, and individual responsibility were the best of what it meant to be a human being. And who believed that all human beings were deserving of the opportunity to excel to the limits their skills, talents, ability, and work ethic allowed them. Who believed that no man or woman should be artificially held down or artificially raised up based on things that were not matters of character, intelligence, skill, or talent. Still believes this. It is the job of every single citizen of this nation to remind him or herself and others that we do still believe in those things. That what matters about a person is the content of his or her character. And that what matters about a person is what they do with that character. How it shines as a light to guide others, or muffles truths like a dirty blanket. It comes back to understanding that the just powers of government derive from the consent of the governed. Our government is not there to provide you with a popsicle on a summer day. It is not there to get you a lovely cushion to put in your reclining toilet. It is not there to take what you earn and give it to someone else that it decides is more worthy than you are. That is not the function of our government. Our government was created by men who believed in both the angelic and demonic aspects of the human soul. Understood that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So they crafted a document, a skeleton, if you will, for the body politic, that would minimize the opportunity for abuse of power. They crafted it well, and if we adhere to it, and we don't adjust its bone structure so it has no head and six arms and 1 foot to please an elected official. If we keep that skeleton and we make sure we understand why it's there, we can and will continue to be the greatest nation on earth. Our great experiment has not failed yet, ladies and gentlemen, and will not fail if we don't allow it to. If we, as individuals, as groups, as families, as communities refuse to accept the idea that we are incapable of governing ourselves. Our nation will live and prosper and remain the beacon of hope that it has been for over 200 years. But if we do not take responsibility, if we do not take the risk of being politically incorrect or offending somebody or having our neighbors frown at us instead of waving when we walk by, if we do not stand up and speak the truth as we see it, and if we do not defend the right of everyone else to do so as well, whether we agree with them or not, then that body politic, whose skeleton was so beautifully crafted by those men so long ago, will die. I don't believe that it will. I don't believe that we will commit national suicide for the sake of a bowl of pottage. I don't believe that the professional victim mentality is so deeply ingrained in our society that it will never go away. Because I don't believe there is any such thing as a victim in the sense that the progressive elite view it. You are only a victim if you allow yourself to be. And my friends and my family, both my personal family and my extended family at www.patriotfamilies.com, are not victims and never will be. I urge you to join us on our website. Visit us on our daily radio shows. On Sunday, Frank is Fed Up. On Monday, Constitution Hour. Tuesdays, Patriot Family Chat. Wednesdays, Right from the Left Coast. Thursdays, Patriot Education. On Fridays, Foreclosure Help. On Saturdays, Breaking the Illusion. Join us here in the chat room. Call in. Tell us what you're thinking. Tell us what you're doing. Tell us what you think we should do. If you have a dissenting opinion, feel free to call in. The only thing we ask and the only thing we demand is that you present your ideas as clearly as you can. And we will respect your right to hold them, even though we do not agree with them. And we ask you do the same for us. We'll be here again next Thursday, ladies and gentlemen, for another episode of Patriot Education. And it may be History 102, it may be Mathematics 1B, it may be just about anything. But it will be connected with the fact that every single one of us is both a student and a teacher. We are students of life, and we are teachers of morality, ethics, and values. If we give up either of those roles, then our nation will die. And I don't believe that any of you out there will see that happen. That's why, even though I get frustrated and I get angry and I may use colorful language to describe those opinions I despise, I am still eternally grateful that we have an open forum, ladies and gentlemen, in this nation to really, really tell each other what we think. I really don't care whether I'm politically correct or not. I don't strive to offend, because I derive pleasure from it. I do strive, however, to see as clearly as I can, speak as clearly as I can, and give others the equal responsibility and right to do the same. I hope you'll join us here next week for Patriot Education, ladies and gentlemen. And my thanks to Bill and Linda and Martha and Ron, Linda and Ron, for calling in and sharing their views and joining in a great discussion and conversation. And Oz and Yolanda and all the folks out there in Blog Talk Radio Land who've been listening to our show tonight. My friend Martha is surprised that I call myself colorful. Well, maybe I'm not. You know. Maybe I'm a sort of pale gray. Well, my husband just is laughing in the background. Apparently, he thinks I'm colorful, too. Not highly complimented, thank you. Anyway, we'll see you again and hear you again, I hope, on Thursday next week for another episode of Patriot Education. Meanwhile, Remember that a slap in the face doesn't kill you, but it does wake you up, ladies and gentlemen. Get out there and make sure that everyone you know is registered to vote without telling them who they're supposed to vote for. Just that they have to take the responsibility to vote. They've got to have skin in the game if they're going to complain about what they get. Have a wonderful evening, everyone. Good night, and God bless.